I'm Amy, your host of Mother Lessons. I'm a postpartum doula supporting women through the transition into motherhood and after through emotional and physical support. Mothers need other mothers, and through this podcast we can connect and support each other. Mother Lessons was inspired by the word matrescence. The word was coined in the 70s by anthropologist Dana Raphael. It is the transition period of becoming a mother. Similar to a child becoming a teenager through adolescence, our hormones go wild, our hair and skin change, we learn a whole new dynamic to our bodies and our relationships around us. This podcast is for mothers and mothers-to-be. It's here to support mothers in this massive transition and identity shift, which can happen over many years. We will explore all things mothering ourselves and our children, because mothering ourselves is the first step. I want to welcome Emma Ross from Mamalina, a blog about sustainable parenting, slow living, motherhood, relationships, food, yoga, and so much more. Emma has inspired me to make more sustainable choices within our family and is a constant inspiration, and I love following her on Instagram and her very cute three boys. Welcome, Emma, to the podcast.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for having me.
So nice to have you. So I usually start with this question to all people that I interview. How did you experience the identity change from maiden to mother? And I also want to add to that with you, and also how was the shift from one to two and two to three? So just that kind of journey from being completely single and free to suddenly being a mother, and then that growth that you've had.
So for me, I had children quite a few years before any of my friends even were in that zone or thinking about it. So when I fell pregnant and when we had our first, I just wanted to stay the same as me. Like I wanted to carry on going to the festivals, carry on traveling, keep going to the pub birthdays and just kind of do it, but have our baby in tow. Like, and I think, I suppose I had this kind of like thing. I didn't want to miss out. Like, I didn't want to be different now that I had a child. And I don't know what it would have been like if I'd have opted out of those things, but I know that opting in, like, it made me feel like I could still do it all. But it did also, I know, bring some stress upon me and my husband and our situation. Like, you know, we would find ourselves in scenarios that, like, none of our friends with kids now would be in. But because I just wanted to be there and I wanted to keep up, then we were just there with our baby. And that's just me. Like, I just wanted to stay the same. And who knows, maybe if I'd have taken a step back and been like, actually, you know what? We can't travel there to attend that wedding because it actually just doesn't work for us, or, you know, no, maybe we're going to have to say no to that thing or whatever. So I kind of like steamrolled into motherhood and didn't have any friends, that I could talk to with it. And that's sort of why I got into blogging, because, like, yeah, they just weren't conversations that were happening with my contemporaries and my friends. Like, and in some ways that was good. Like, years later, now that we all have children, sometimes I find those conversations quite dull. Like, when we're all sitting around talking about sleep and food, I'm like, oh, I kind of like the days when no one had this to talk about except me. Or at least, you know, these weren't the conversations and I had to find them elsewhere. I think I came to like the identity of motherhood quite late in that sense. I don't know. But then there's a big part of me as well that's like, well, like, it shouldn't really change anything anyway. Like, sorry, these are such jumbled thoughts. I think I have like,
I love it,
interesting opinions about it. But I think it's so personal, and it, you know, when you choose to, or when motherhood comes to you, because it's not really something you can choose, I don't believe it anyway. It just depends on where you're at with it, with your life. And, you know, sometimes I think having out too big a space for motherhood is not a good thing at all. I think I've maybe carved out not enough bigger space for the transformation, but equally I think when you carve out too large a space, that can also be problematic in different ways.
Yeah, no, I totally can relate to that. I think I wasn't really that prepared for the massive shift that was going to happen. And I think I wish I had friends who told me sort of like, oh yeah, you are about to embark on like a pretty big journey and a pretty big identity shift. So I do like talking about people's experiences with how they perceive that shift, because some people just fly into it and some people just get so shocked about how hard it is to not be themselves anymore. But it sounds like you had a really interesting and unique experience because you were younger and none of your friends were having kids.
No. Like, I was on Twitter in the night feeds, like connecting with various mummy bloggers around, like talking about all of that stuff.
And how was the shift from one to two and two to three?
The shift from one to two, well, for me, and I'm sure that you'll probably agree, like entering those initial phases, like depend so strongly on how your birth was. So my first birth, I think, was quite a typical birth, like first birth, like very long, very drawn out, stop, start, like they kind of traumatic. But everything was fine in the end, sort of thing. But this, my second birth was just like dramatically better, shorter, quicker, in the water. And that just set me off in such a good, like I was just so grateful and like proud of myself that from that birth. And I just, so, and we had a great like start to it. So I found the transition from one to two, fine, because I found the shock from naught to one much more like so I found the transition from one to two, like obviously initially at first you're like, oh, I'm never gonna leave the house, or like, how does this work? And but quite quickly we got into a groove and, you know, realized that you just put the baby on the floor whilst you're bathing the other one. And you know, it was, and he was just, I think he was just an easier baby, like I think he was an easier baby our second. Transition from two to three, I found definitely harder than one to two, definitely. Just, yeah, like, I don't know if it was the age gap or I just felt like I was really in my groove with two, and then it did throw me going from two to three in a way that one to two didn't. And also, like, we'd moved house and a couple of other external things had happened. So obviously that also impacts it. You know, we got burgled, just stuff like that was happening. We had like a moth infestation and everything was eaten, so we had to like, I mean, it's pretty much like it's, you have to just do so much when that happens, and so it felt a little bit overwhelming. But things are obviously much calmer now.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. I really see on your Instagram that community and your sort of village, your people are important to you, and you seem like you get a lot of support. I watched this training recently from Innate Traditions, a woman called Raquel Garcia, just in case anyone's interested. And she talks about the importance of the village or your people, your support network, from a physiological point of view. So she talks about how the baby in the belly has two layers of support in the amniotic sac. So if one breaks, it has the other. And then it's born, and then it has another two layers, the mother and the father, or the mother and mother and the father and the father. And then the mother or the primary carer has to have two layers of support. And so that's normally the partner, and then fill in the blank, mother. And then this is where it breaks down normally, where the father also needs two layers of support. And I feel like in our culture, like we just do not have that kind of village kind of support. And this, this way of looking at a support network and system just really like grounded down the term the village for me. I just really want to know your perspective on that, and did you feel that you had support from your village or your people, your community around you, and how did that look postpartum?
I definitely feel like I had support because I've got a really supportive husband, and I'm very close to my mom, and I've also got a sister. And I've got two brothers, and so I feel very cushioned and supported by them. And also because because I have like a super close relationship to my mom, to my sister, to my other siblings, and that's definitely not a given, and I'm so grateful for that. I really feel for people that don't have that immediate, those family, or because I definitely lean on my family more than I lean on my friends. But like, for example, I did really think about working with someone like you, with a doula, especially if we were to have a home birth. But for me, something that I kept coming up against was like, how would someone like you, sorry, this is going off a bit on a tangent, like, how do they interact with other people in your village or bubble? And how does it not feel a bit like, you know, like, I don't know, overloaded, not overloaded, but like, how, I guess I felt like I'm not sure that I would have a need for someone like a doula, but I feel like if someone like that was there, then I would also really appreciate it. And then there's that question of like, well, how much support is too much support? Like, you know, like it's if it's there, like, and if it's an option, then that's incredible. So yeah, but I think that's really interesting about the father support system. Just knowing, you know, what men may be more inclined to kind of be in their cave and when they need that support as well. So
yeah, and there's such a big support to the mother, and it's like when that breaks down,
yeah,
if the partner's not, doesn't feel supported. And I don't think there's enough emphasis on even or focus on that the father is also going through a massive transition into becoming a parent himself. I think so much is focused on the mother and the baby.
Yeah.
But the father's just like keeping everything together and like, well,
are there doulas that work with dad?
There are, but you know what? That's not my focus, but I have been thinking there needs to be more because it's incredible. And I think, imagine if there was more sort of male role models that could hold that space for fathers.
Yeah.
With that sort of more male energy of holding space for the feminine. I find that really interesting, but I've not got down that road so much.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But you sounded like you had lots of support from your family anyway.
And we live pretty close. And also the kids, my eldest is at school, and you know, it's a really small school. There's a lot of support. So when a mum has a baby, everybody makes meals for that mum. Mm-hmm. And so I'd have like meals left on my doorstep when I opened the door, and like instructions on how to heat them up and small things like that. It was super, super nice.
That sounds dreamy. That sounds proper village. Yeah, so the transition into motherhood can often be quite shocking for some, and the dynamic changes with yourself, with your friends, and your partner can take some time to get used to. What pearls of wisdom do you have for the first-time pregnant women and all women alike in regards to relationships and how to sustain them whilst growing and sustaining a family and both having a purpose outside of that as well? Do you have any pearls of wisdom?
To a new parent, new mum to be, first time new mum to be, definitely nourish your and your partner's relationship like full on before your baby comes. Like I remember our neighbour was pregnant there for the first time, and I would like see them like walking hand in hand with her massive bump, like down to the shops and like to get like, you know, a drink or whatever. And I'd just be like, yes, like enjoy this time, just you two, because and build up all that like good strength, because once the baby comes along, like, and once you're outside of that initial birth bubble, because I remember after having our first, I like could not leave my husband's side. I was like, after going through the experience of birthing, if you're fortunate enough to have a partner, like it's so powerful. And I was like obsessed with him. I was like, I just needed to be with him. But then once all that bits passed and like the sleeplessness kicks in and you know, all the rest of the stuff and like working out the dynamic of like how do we navigate this, and then you need to have something to fall back on. So I would just say like just nourish your relationship so hard. If you're a first time parent. But in terms of the other stuff, like it's so hard. I think something that we struggle with is like this almost like point scoring thing where we'll be like, not point scoring, but I don't know what the right phrase is, like when you'll be like, well, I've done this number X of hours of childcare today, so like I want to take a break now. Oh, but I did this yesterday. Yeah. And it's horrible because it, like, apart from anything else, it makes you feel like looking after the kids is like the booby prize. And like to this day, like we don't have an answer for it. And I try to live by the mantra, like the more you give, like it will come back to you. Like, you know, so we try and be generous with our time, but like, it's hard, like, you know, negotiate, like now, for example, you know, I looked after the kids for an hour yesterday extra so that Sam could like cover me now. And like, it's navigating it is really, really hard. Unless you're somebody that's just a full-time mom who does 100% of the childcare, which is quite rare these days, but you know, back in the day that was the norm. And I'm sure that in answer to your question, like these kind of dynamics that modern day relationships are navigating, like just weren't the case back then. Like men would go out and work, earn money, women would be at home with the children. And in many ways, I'm sure that was so much simpler.
Yeah, I totally talk about this all the time because I don't want to go back to that at all. But at the same time, I see my grandparents, and it was just, they looked like they danced with each other in the way that they care for kids or grandchildren, because they knew their roles so solidly. So it was just like, there was no question, you know? And I think in the modern family, it's a lot of like, oh, but you said you would do this. And I said, and it's just this whole confusion of this umbrella of confusion. And I think, planning, I guess, planning and structure within that helps a lot. We have tables every week now just to get really clear, but.
You have tight what?
Timetables.
Do you?
Yes.
I think the other thing that is hard as well now for modern couples is the phone. Like, I feel like that interrupts with the little amount of free time we have so much. Mm. Like, you know, when it gets to the evening, sometimes we just find ourselves like on our phone. I'm like, no, we've got to stop this now. Like, you know, this is really precious time. And again, like, I feel like, back in our grandparents' time, our parents' time, like that was another thing that they didn't have to distract them. And it's another massive obstacle that modern day families and partnerships need to navigate.
Yeah, I saw that you went off Instagram for many, many months and you sort of announced that you were going to more blog than Instagram. Do you still feel...
Yeah.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
It's really hard. And I've been talking about this literally just this week because like the whole Instagram story thing, and it just, I don't like it. And yet I find myself doing it because I know that people do spend time on their phone and do consume that kind of media, but I know that it doesn't sit well with me. So I'm kind of in this strange place of like not wanting to, because I don't think you can change people's behavior. Like I remember there's a guy called Rory Sutherland who works in kind of marketing and advertising. And he's like, don't go against the grain of how people behave, like go with it. So on one hand, I feel like I need to go with it. On the other hand, I'm like, I don't want to endorse just flicking through content mindlessly.
I guess that's just discernment with the person, isn't it? They've got to figure it out themselves. But anyway, off
topic. Yeah, but if you're putting it out there, then you're not endorsing it, yeah.
No, totally. I agree. So I want to ask you questions about sustainability. Mm. Can you explain to the listeners what drives and inspires you to spread this message of sustainable parenting? Like, what inspired you and sparked you to get into this?
It was definitely via nappies, just because... like I knew it was such a core part of parenting, but you know, when I came to the topic of nappies, like I was like many, I didn't even know how to put one on. But then we did these NCT classes, and at the end of one of those classes, the teacher started mentioning about cloth nappies. By which point,
NCT,
but it was kind of like very much shoehorned in at the end, like 30 seconds, everyone else is kind of getting their coats ready to walk out the door. And I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. And so I kind of stayed behind and talked to her about it. yeah, so it started with that and realizing that there was definitely an alternative way to parent that involved less waste and thinking a bit more consciously about how you did things. And then I just started exploring other things, from toys to kind of bathroom stuff to DIY to cooking, and just realized that even though we're bombarded with messages of consumption and ready-made and immediate and brand new and all of this stuff, like, we don't have to do things that way.
Yeah, for
sure.
There
are other ways, yeah.
100%. A lot of people find it kind of overwhelming to think about, or they think, okay, I've got the intention, I really want to use cloth nappies, but they find it overwhelming. Do you have just some sort of fuss-free tips on how to get started with that for a new mother?
Cloth nappies specifically,
and then maybe some other things I'll ask you after. Yeah.
So first day, I definitely say check out if your local council offers any free vouchers. I mean, at least here in the UK, like, there's more and more councils now participating in this nappy scheme. Like, our council, they give us 55 quid go and spend specifically on cloth nappies.
And the
councils do lots of different schemes. Some of them lend out kits, some of them give you like a starter pack, some of them give you money to spend. It's all a bit different depending on where you're based, but definitely, like, check that out. You know, it's what we pay our taxes for. Like, it's an incredible scheme, and it's just, word isn't out there quite enough yet. So definitely check that out. And then I would say, just like, the problem with cloth nappies is that there's so much jargon around and there's so many different words and terms and labels, and it's been so overcomplicated. I can't, like, it's just become so overcomplicated, and it really doesn't need to be. It's just a piece of fabric. You know, it's got completely taken over by, just like jargon and marketing, which, you know, it's great because it shows people are interested, but it doesn't have to be complicated. So I would say, like, search on, there's some great Facebook groups that sell cloth nappies. Have a look, see what's available, go with it, like, or borrow some from a friend, give it a go, and just start small. Just try doing like one a day. Just try using one cloth nappy a day. And then, you know, try two, and then try one overnight, and try one when you're popping out. But especially now in lockdown, like, people are home so much more, it's a great time to give it a go.
So true.
So just explore the nappy scheme, voucher scheme, and just give it a go, see what you can get your hands on.
Yeah, because there's nappy libraries as well.
Yeah. There's nappy libraries where you can go, and they host like demos where they'll show you how to use them. They'll sell stuff that kind of, some of them do with a discount. And they're like local experts, basically. But definitely find your local nappy library. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, because I've got really put off by cloth nappies, because a friend gave me a load and they just didn't fit my daughter. And they just leaked all the time. And now, looking back, and if I have a second, I would definitely go to a cloth nappy and try different models for the baby, because each baby is different. And
what were they?
I can't even remember. I think they were so old. I think also because they were old, I was just trying not to buy too much stuff. So I was like, okay, that'll do. But actually, I think investing in good cloth nappies, if you're going to use them for years, is you spend so much on disposables, and then you see how much landfill that it creates. It's just, it's insane. Absolutely insane. And I just I just love your message about cloth nappies. It's such a simple message, but it's like, you make it so accessible. And if you haven't checked out Emma's blog and also videos, go check them out. So much resources there, so yeah, people can play with all that for sure. What else? How do you talk to your kids? Do you talk to your kids about sustainability and changing the planet and all that kind of thing? And how do you make it sort of age appropriate and not scary, you know?
See, I think, like, Greta Thunberg, for all the good that she's done, I think she's quite a scary figure for kids.
Oh, do you think?
Yeah, I think she's quite, for young kids, like, for teenagers, like, not so much, but for young kids, the way that she puts her message out, I don't think it's that accessible for young children. But you know, it works on so many other levels, but I'm not sure it works for young children. We just try and live it as much as possible. So whether that's going on litter picks, or composting, or growing a bit of food, or avoiding plastic stuff, like we just try and live it and talk at the same time about it. Like they absorb so much information, like it's crazy, like how much they're learning all the time. So yeah, I think it's about finding those teachable, livable moments. And I mean, that's what I try and do anyway, but and just incorporating those messages of sustainability within them. We've got some books and we read some books, and that's a great way as well. I think through experience, nothing can beat that.
Yeah, they're copying and mimicking everything.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I think when I first started following you a couple of years ago, you spoke a lot about how your kids kind of just follow you with what you do. And, and you know, you do the gardening, they do the gardening with you. You do the washing, they do it with you. And, and you sort of were an advocate that was just easier to be a mother that way. And
Yeah,
I love that. They're just part of your life. So yeah, you mentioned a few things like litter picking and growing veg, but like, have you got any top daily sort of practices that you and your family have installed in your everyday life that if everyone did, it would make a huge difference? Just like the top sort of three things that if everyone sort of incorporated.
Every day.
Well, yeah, or weekly or in their life, you know, as a general practice.
I definitely think cooking food together is a really nice one, and something that I try and do. And it doesn't, like, when I say cook food, I'm talking about everything from like putting bread in the toaster to like helping make pizza from scratch. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about getting involved and doing useful stuff as a family, and not differentiating between, oh, you're the child, I'll serve you. You sit there, you wait there, I will bring it to you. It's like, no, actually get a chair, please. Come over here, do this, you know, use your knife. Got this very cool, like, kid-friendly knives with like a guard, and it's really
amazing. What's it called? Do you remember?
It's by a brand called Opinel.
Opinel, okay, cool. We'll put it in the show notes.
And yeah, I think it's just about treating them like mini adults, and having expectations of them, because they are, I think children are way wiser and smarter and more on the ball than we give them credit for. And that in all the good ways and the bad ways. I definitely say cooking and prepping stuff together is a good one. I was going to say being together as much as possible.
What are the sustainable sort of things in your family have you installed?
I'm trying to think now, because it's just like how we live. So I'm trying to think
it's your norm.
Deliberate. Aside from, I don't know, I guess it's just like the kids know that, you know, we go shopping in secondhand shops, and, you know, that's where they'll get their stuff. And, you know, we're going to pick up Jack's new cricket bat from someone on Gumtree later today. And I think just getting them used to certain habits, and, you know, I want that to be the norm for him. That they grow up thinking, you know, oh yeah, like we should, you know, see if we can find this pre-love somewhere before we start thinking about it new.
I love that word, pre-loved. I don't use that enough. Write that down.
I keep thinking of like non-specific sustainable examples, but I'm trying to think what else.
Like, what do you say to your kids when they look at a toy that someone has bought brand new and really wants it? Like, what kind of things do you sort of, do they just have it ingrained in them and it's like, well, it's not good for Mother Earth, or do you
mean like one of their friends might have it?
Yeah, exactly.
And that they know it, that it's new or something.
Yeah.
Look, like for some birthdays and stuff, they will get new presents from friends. Even though I would like to say to people, can you source secondhand? And maybe I'll do that next year. But last year we tried out something where we split up a party with a few friends, and we said to all the kids, just bring one gift, don't label it, and we'll divide out the gifts at the end. So the kids got way less gifts, but we thought, well, but maybe next year we'll try that, but add saw secondhand on top. But yeah, no, they do get new things, and I don't think they're not like shocked by kids having new things. I think they just understand that there's so many things in this world, and I try and explain to them the concept that even though somebody else might not want that, like, it's still perfectly good, and we might want that, and you know, we might not want this anymore, but actually another child might love this. And I think that's also how I talk a lot about food. So like, for us, food waste is a really, really big thing, and like, I hate it and don't really tolerate it, and try and explain to the kids like how important it is to value food and how we're so fortunate to have food. And you know, it just grates on me so much when they complain about food or something like this, and I just try and say to them calmly, like, look, like, you know, this is a plate of fresh, nutritious food. Like, there's lots of children who, you know, and it's hard because you don't want to scaremonger your children.
Yeah.
At the same time, I don't want to hide the truth from them, and I want to be honest with them. So when it comes to sustainability, I think it's about, yeah, teaching them the messages at the heart of it, through like experience, but not overwhelming them. But yeah, being honest with them, like, actually, if we eat this piece of fish, it might contain tiny bits of plastic in it. You know, that's the truth. You know, but it's hard because you don't want to scare them.
I know, that's the balance in between. Do you ever show them any sort of documentaries or any special cartoons or anything like that?
We do watch a lot of nature programs, but it's more like, it's not the bad side of it. Although I haven't actually ever done that, showed them damage. I mean, I've shown them snippets, but we haven't sat down to watch anything full. I like them more to like realize and appreciate how beautiful the world is and what we can do to not damage it. But I think you're right. I think I will show them the other side of it as well. Some of the damage that has been done. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What is inspiring you and lighting you up right now? Right now in this like week or month?
What's inspiring me? I mean, I'm very inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement, to be honest. I'd say that. Things I'm reading, listening to, watching, I'm just trying to consume as much as possible. And yeah, it's hugely sad and hugely inspiring at the same time that there's this, you know, movement happening, and let's hope it is a movement, not a moment. But yeah, I'd say that for sure. And I'm just learning a lot. I'm learning a lot.
Do you feel like it's impacting your work, and does it inspire your work, or is it more of a personal thing?
It has inspired my work, especially in terms of environmentalism. So I've been reading a lot about environmental justice, and some of the kind of founding people around that. And yeah, like it does make me hugely more aware of everything going on, you know, people's insecurities around the world. It's just as ever, like, finding the time to try and communicate that. So I suppose it's affecting me most. I suppose both is the answer, but I haven't been able to put out as much work about it as I would like to. So I guess I'm at that kind of like absorbing things now on a personal level. What I really want it to do is to inform my work one way or another along the way. That's my hope. But I hope to write more pieces around it, and I've written one piece around it specifically. But it is very inspiring and very interesting and very sad all in one. And everything I'm reading and watching and listening to just, is testament to the huge amount of work that everyone still needs to do. And yeah, as I said, let's just hope that this is we've kind of turned a corner here.
Yeah, for sure. It's more about us. I totally respect what you're doing. It's like embodying all the information that you're absorbing and also restructuring your beliefs from childhood and everything that we've been exposed to. And that's our main responsibility, I would say, to see the world in a new lens. You have to do the work first. You can't just read an article and then you'll change.
So you don't have
to be projecting it all the time. It's like inner work, isn't it?
Yeah.
So just two more questions that I ask all guests. What three books would you recommend a mother to read? Now, it can be on any subject you want. But what helped you as a mother? And if it's sustainability sort of in that realm, then great, but it doesn't have to be.
So I've got one here, actually. So I found this book. Do you know this book?
Yes.
So I found this book on the street. I think we were in, I'm trying to think, I definitely found it. Yes, I remember now. In North London, basically, on the street.
Yeah.
I was thinking, were we away? Was this America? But it wasn't.
Is it Pam England?
We had a child. Pam England and Rob Horowitz.
Oh, I'm studying with Pam England at the moment. Yeah.
With her?
Well, yeah, doing birth story listening. She does birth story mentoring.
Oh,
so,
wow.
But this is her doulaing book. Yeah.
Amazing. So I found this and I was like pregnant or something. And I was like, this looks interesting. And it's such a fascinating book. And I hadn't heard of, Ina May or any of these kind of alternative birthing. I just came to this completely cold and found it so beautiful. And with each baby I've had, I've gone back to it and read it, and it's put me in such a calm space. After my first birth, I was a bit like, oh god, like my birth did not look anything like that, but I think that it certainly like helped me significantly know that there is that potential. And I remember, and so it really helped me for my subsequent births. And I remember in this book it talks about labor a lot and the work and stuff involved as well, which is what I really liked, because I think sometimes that is glossed over, just like how much hard work it is.
Yeah.
And you think you're going to like pop out a baby, but actually it's called labor for a reason.
Yeah.
Like it's seriously hard. And I also love the book for that, as well as the all the hippy dippy, lovely, wonderful stuff as well.
Yeah. So just for the audience, it's Birthing From Within by Pam England. Yeah, because they can't see it.
Yeah.
And also yesterday I was just looking at your website and I saw your birthing video with your last child. So beautiful. So I really recommend watching that. Love that you danced through your birth.
Oh my gosh. I could not have labored without music. No way.
Amazing. And you've got a playlist there as well. So people
can get that. Got two playlists, one more like chilled, one more energy vibes. Which other parenting books? This just came to me, actually. There's a book I really like by an author I really like called Antonella Gambetta-Berg. I don't know if you know it.
No.
Called Motherhood, Love, and the Revolution. I'm struggling to remember. I think that's the exact name. I've lent it out to a friend, so I don't have it here. And it's just a book I love dipping in and out of and haven't for a while, hence why I've misrecalled the name. It's have a look at it. It's a quite revolutionary, in inverted commas, because she, I think, calls for quite a lot of the stuff we discussed at the beginning, like a kind of, she calls for like a reprioritization of motherhood, and kind of talks about it in a way that like it's not, the job of mothering a child is not given enough respect. Take a look.
That's really interesting.
And which other books? I've got a hypnobirthing book here by my friend, The Positive Birth Company, because I did do a lot of hypnobirthing in my second and third labors, especially my third, which kind of went hand in hand with the dancing and the music. I definitely recommend just like exploring the notion of hypnobirthing for people who are interested in natural birthing.
Do you have a specific book that you read that helped you?
So her book is called Practical Ways to Make Your Birth Better by Siobhan Miller, from the Positive Birth Company. And I think it's a helpful guide for anyone, as I said, interested in this kind of alternative drug-free natural labor.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you for those. So one last question. What would you say to your newborn mother self with the experience you have now after having three children?
I'm trying to think back to how I was. I think it's a bit cliched, but really this notion that everything's just a phase, because and that really helped me this third time round when I was, I mean, it helped me and it didn't help me, like when you're going through those, like for me, all three of mine at around like the 7 month mark, like the sleep has just been like off the charts bad, you know, up every 30 minutes kind of thing. And this time I was really able to like tell myself that I know this will pass. Like, I know this is freaking hard and horrible right now. And I'm like, absolutely like a walking zombie, but I know this will pass.
Yeah.
And it's quite a bittersweet one as well, because all the sweet good times, you know, also will pass and will soon change. And so I think it's for good times and for bad times, that one. Like our youngest is going through that phase where he like chucks everything out of drawers, like on like a proper mission. Like in this morning, he's just been pulling all the nappies out of the thing, and he does it like with such focus and so fast. And it's so cute. But I know it will pass soon, and he won't do that anymore. So
that was my mantra as well. This too shall pass.
It's yeah,
a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Emma, for coming on and speaking to me and the audience about all your things, all your sustainability things, and also motherhood in general. You've been amazing.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and there's been lots of people excited to listen to this, so I'm really looking forward to releasing it. So thank you so much.
Thank you, and have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I really enjoyed speaking to the lovely Emma from Mamalina. Dave and I bought an Opinel knife with the finger guard after she recommended it, and I can't wait to get it. It looks amazing. Juniper's just getting into cutting everything. So I really recommend those. I love all her messages and would love to hear from you all what inspired you. What actions will you take to live and model a sustainable life to your children? The conversations I have in this podcast make me realise that we are all the same going through the human experience, and I've had many messages about how normalising all the things we go through when becoming a mother has helped, and I'm so glad. I started this podcast to build a bridge for mothers to feel supported. I've been hosting an online mother circle for pregnant women and mothers of young babies and toddlers every Friday for over 3 months now. I started it at lockdown. We have really created a community and a support net. I'm going to take a break for about 3 weeks, and the next term starts August 21st, and we will meet bi-weekly for 6 sessions. So it really gives us time to create community and support network in between the sessions and during the sessions. The circle is shared with mothers from all around, and I like to keep it small and intimate, so please book. I'm opening up new spots for new pregnant women and mothers, and you can book in my Instagram profile at Amy Illich or on my website. Have a beautiful couple of weeks until the next episode.